Yesterday, I am rejoined by the Athletic LA Clippers reporter, Jovan Duha. What's going on, Jovan?
How's it going, man? I'm trying to hang in there just like everybody else, but missing basketball right now. How you doing?
I'm in the same boat, man, missing the NBA. It's crazy, man. I've been able to cover games, watch games on TV. It's crazy right now.
Seriously, it's we should be in like the middle of the second round of the playoffs right now, and instead we don't even know if there's going to be one.
Yeah, one of the most looked forward playoffs in years.
Yeah,
he's one of the best in years, and got interrupted unexpectedly. He's crazy, man.
Yeah, it felt like this was the first time in like over a decade where you really didn't know who the two final teams are going to be, because on paper, right, you know, Lakers and the Bucks are the two best teams during the regular season at
yeah.
the time of postponement. But if you told me it was a Clippers-Celtics finals, if you told me it was a Rockets-Raptors, like, I'd be a little bit surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. Like, this was the first year in a while where, usually there's at least one, you know, it was the Warriors for a while, it was the Heat, it was those Lakers teams, the Celtics teams, where you at least felt one of the, you know, you at least knew one of the two final teams, if not both. This was really the first year, you know, since, I don't know, where going back to maybe, what, 07?
Yeah.
Something like that range where you're just like, could be any of 6, 7, 8 teams and you'd believe it. So it was going to be an exciting postseason, and I hope we do end up seeing it at some point.
Yeah, it was the open field, and Kawhi on me, thanks for that, because he went to the Clippers instead of going to the Lakers, created another super, super team. So, yeah, I hope they return, but we'll have to see in a minute. Now, you haven't been on in a while. Since you last been on, your career has taken a major – I mean, you had major progress in your career. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so what – do you remember when the last time I was on or around what
state-wise? It was like maybe a year ago.
A year ago,
there.
Yeah. So, okay, so – yeah, I mean, last year has been very fun. Obviously, the big, you know, around this point last year, the Clippers had just been eliminated in the postseason,
yeah.
and all the talk was on free agency and what was going to happen. They were linked most notably to Kawhi Leonard, but there was also some Kevin Durant chatter. There was just a lot of chatter around them making some type of move and pulling something big off. Even if it wasn't Kawhi or KD, maybe trading for a star with some of their assets. So that was really my focus for that next, you know, month or so. And then obviously the Kawhi Leonard situation ended up happening.
Right.
And that was a crazy night for me. Like I had already pre-written 3 different versions of the Kawhi saga of, you know, he stays in Toronto, he goes to the Lakers,
yeah.
he re-signs with the Clippers.
Right.
And it was almost 11 p.m. Pacific time on a Friday night. The next morning, I was actually going to Summer League in Las Vegas, and that's when the news dropped. And of course, not only Kawhi Leonard, but Paul George. So then that was a whole other wrinkle I had to add into my story and basically rewrite
right.
like half of it. So I was up another 2 hours writing that. And Kawhi definitely changed things for me. It's been great for my career, my following, just the attention on the Clippers and just sort of the national appeal on the Clippers. You know, last season's story was great, but
yeah.
people only care about an underdog story for so long. It's usually kind of a one-hit wonder type thing. So I've been fortunate that the 2 years I've been covering them. Then obviously this season, it's been a lot of load management and, different guys being in and out of the lineup, and had a big story in January on the team's chemistry and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that was going on there. And then, you know, they were rolling, winning 7 of 8 right before the postponement.
Right.
And then, obviously, you know, Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID, and
yeah,
we're here now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, yeah, the past year has been fun. It definitely is more, you know, I would say, like, fulfilling and gratifying covering a better team with more interest, you know, it is like you don't, as a beat person, like I believe you shouldn't root for your team and, you know, you should try to be objective and, You know, you cover stuff that the fans want to read and know about, but at the same time, it is better when the team is more successful because then guys in the locker room are happier. Guys want to talk to you more. There's more interest overall. So that has been the big change in terms of my beat over the last year or so, and that's been really a positive and something that's been fun to experience.
Yeah, Kawhi's transition to the Clippers was crazy. We all remember they were throwing his plane back to Toronto, and his camp wasn't leaking anything. There were reports they didn't go to L.A. because they were leaking things. And there he is in L.A. with the Clippers.
Seriously, yeah. Like, that was the fact that he was not eliminated from the Clippers made me, like, the more time that had passed, you know, I was getting a little worried of just, you know, what's happening is, you know, you're not hearing anything from the Clippers, but then it kind of dawned on me, like, they always move in quiet, in silence, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the Lil Wayne line, you know, real G's move in silence like lasagna, like, that's really how the Clippers have operated going, you know, this new front office that started in 2017.
Right.
After they, you know, stripped Doc of his front office title, promoted Lawrence Frank, added Jerry West, added Michael Winger, just reshaped that front office. You know, they pulled off, you know, they traded Chris Paul. They, you know, traded Blake Griffin. They let DeAndre Jordan walk in free agency. They ended up trading Tobias Harris. You know, they pulled off the Kawhi and PG moves. Like, they've done all these big blockbuster decisions that no one really saw coming. There was no rumors, no pre-reporting on any of it. So you got to give them credit for their ability not only to execute and make difficult decisions, but to make the right decisions. Like, really, if you look at their track record since they've taken over in the summer of 2017, it's been a lot of at least singles, if not doubles, triples, and home runs. Like, they have not struck out with many of their decisions. So that's definitely one of the top front offices in the league right now. And I think that Kawhi move was not only the cherry on top, maybe the whipped cream too, a little bit of chocolate syrup. Like, that was the, you know, the kind of the shining thing that they pulled off. But, you know, they've also made some other really productive moves. I think trading Blake Griffin, a lot of people were concerned about that at first, and that's worked out. So you got to give them credit.
Yeah, the NBA is starting to open up practice facilities in a couple of days this Friday. Do you think a hiatus will have a major effect on the Clippers? I know every team has to get back in game condition, and they're having all these stipulations for having players in the gym. The Clippers are fairly young, though. I don't think it'll have a major effect. I think most players, especially one of Pat Beverly, he's already staying in shape. A lot of players are already doing things on their own. How do you see the hiatus affecting most of the Clippers?
I think it should actually help the Clippers. To your point, you know, they do have an interesting mix of, like, young, you know, for the most part, everyone's pretty much young on the team.
Yeah.
The only people over 30 are Pat Beverly and Lou Williams in the rotation. So those are the two guys you kind of look at where, you know, it does kind of happen randomly where, you know, how many times have we seen it? A good player, you know, the most recent Clipper example I can think of is like Paul Pierce, where he you know, one post season he's with Washington hitting game-winning jumpers in the playoffs. 4 months later, he's completely washed and can't really play anymore. So I do think that with older guys in their 30s, the drop-off is very significant, and it almost happens kind of randomly. Of just, it could really just happen, you know, one off-season to the next, you just lose it. And I think that would be the only concern for, like, a guy like Pat or Lou is, you know, does this time off with really no access to a basketball court that we're aware of, you know, how does that affect them? I think staying in shape, all the guys, I mean, you know, I wrote about it. Other people have written about it. Like, you know, the Clippers have been staying in shape. They've been doing multiple Zoom workouts with their strength and conditioning coaches, you know, each week. And the Clippers sent each guy personalized weightlifting equipment so they could work out at home, in their garage, in their backyard, wherever they work out. So I think for the Clippers, this is a very motivated team. Doc Rivers coined the phrase "win the weight," something they actually just trademarked. And it's, you know, kind of been their mentality is like, we're playing for something. You know, we're not a lottery bottom dweller that who cares if we have the last 15 games of the season or not. Like, the Clippers want to win a title. It's important for everyone on this roster. You got multiple guys in contract years. You got multiple guys that have stuff to prove. So I do think that, you know, and then you also have guys dealing with injuries. Like Kawhi Leonard is obviously continuing to deal with his knee situation.
Right.
Paul George is someone who's had multiple injuries this season. Pat Beverly is someone who's been banged up a lot this season. So I think overall, you know, as long as the guys are staying in shape, this time off and rest could actually be a benefit for them. So I think that's something to kind of monitor depending on how long this postponement, until the return of the season actually is.
Yeah. Kawhi Leonard is known for load management. I like the way the Clippers are approaching the season. They were thinking about the postseason from the beginning. We know Kawhi missed some games in the beginning, so did Paul George because of the shoulder injury. But the Clippers are taking the right move by letting these guys rest and play when they play and not making them play maybe all back-to-backs. But Kawhi came over from Toronto after hitting the shot winning the championship. How much of a tone was it when he went to L.A.? Because,
in terms of, like, the locker room, the culture?
Overall culture of the city. Because, you know, a lot of people say that L.A. were going to the Lakers and now the Clippers came back like, we're here. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, I think you saw it in the branding and the advertising and marketing with the Clippers in terms of, their campaign all across the city.
Yeah.
Pretty much calling out the Lakers and going at the Lakers of, you know, we over me. Streetlights over spotlights, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, but basically, like, their marketing campaign was going directly at the Lakers in a way and kind of the Showtime Hollywood branding of the Lakers and the Clippers sort of branding themselves as a blue-collar alternative to the Lakers in L.A. I do think that, you know, they can't compete with the Lakers when the Lakers are really good, like this season. Ethan Strauss, one of our writers at The Athletic, had actually written earlier in the year that the ratings, there was actually a bigger ratings difference this season between the Lakers and the Clippers than it, you know, like last season and in seasons past. So when the Lakers are good, they are the talk of the town. They are the show. And I think you saw this season that had kind of, they'd taken back that mantle of clearly the number one sports attraction in L.A. But the Clippers were right there. They won on opening night. They won on Christmas.
Yeah.
And I think there was that kind of element of, sure, you guys might have the bigger stars or more attention, but we're the better team, and we've beaten you head-to-head. So the Lakers did get one right before postponement to make the season series 2-1 in favor of the Clippers.
Right.
But I think Kawhi, you know, he set the tone for the culture in terms of, I mean, the expectations just changed so drastically. Like, you know, this was a team that was an 8 seed last year that no one really expected to be an 8 seed. They swapped in, you know, two of their starters, you know, two of their better players in Danilo Gallinari and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for PG and Kawhi, and immediately were the championship favorites. And, I think that in large part is because of Kawhi's standing in the league, you know, reigning finals MVP, two-time champion, just won All-Star MVP. So I think Kawhi right now is in that mix with Giannis and LeBron for best player in the league. I think you might be able to make the case Giannis or LeBron are better, but if I told you it was a game 7 and you needed someone to have a big performance, it's tough to go against Kawhi Leonard given the last two times we've seen him in the postseason, going back to 2017 and what he was doing to the Warriors before he got injured in that series. So I think Kawhi, as I wrote about in January, one of the things that his presence did kind of change was last season's identity was built on being an underdog, and you had all these guys on the Clippers who were second-round picks, undrafted guys, guys who had been traded multiple times, guys who had been given up on in their careers. And I think a lot of those guys identified with that sort of identity. But now going to being the favorites, that had been an adjustment in the locker room. And with the resting and the load management and different stuff, I think it rubbed some guys the wrong way. But that's something that the team has been working through. I think it's gotten better. And But look, like having a guy like Kawhi, you need a top 10, if not top 5 player to really have a shot at winning a championship. Just go through NBA history. It's really hard to find examples. The Detroit Pistons, but you know, is one of the 2004 team. But aside from that, you pretty much always have to have a top 5 or top 10 guy. Kawhi gives you that, and you arguably have a second one in Paul George. So I think his arrival really cemented the Clippers as a premier organization, as a destination, something they had never been before. But you got to think, Kawhi chose the Clippers. Chris Paul was trying to go to the Lakers before he got traded to the Clippers. Blake Griffin was drafted by the Clippers. Like, Kawhi actually chose to go to the Clippers. There's a little bit of a difference there. So that, to me, is just kind of the fulfillment of the past decade, what the Clippers have been building, what it all means. And I think they really have arrived now as, you know, probably somewhere in the top 5 to 7 organizations in the NBA right now. And that is, you know, you were never thought that 10 years ago.
Yeah, I, for one, would love to see a Lakers and Clippers Western Conference Finals. I think a lot of people like to see that. The Battle of L.A. to go to the finals and probably win the championship out of that series. In a 7-game series, they may have, like you said, they may have the bigger stars, LeBron, Anthony Davis, but the Clippers are deep, and you know this. They can have Beverly, Kawhi, Paul George are thrown at LeBron James and Anthony Davis in swarms and tying them down. The rest and players on the Clippers at the same time. And the Clippers are loaded, and they're deep. They're deep at every position.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and the other guy you hadn't even mentioned was Marcus Morris, and that was a big piece they acquired. He's actually not shot the ball that well. He was leading the league in 3-point percentage in New York on a high volume of attempts. And coming to the Clippers, he struggled a bit. He hasn't found himself offensively. Although the last game before the break, they played the Warriors, and he played pretty well. It might have been his best performance. Doc had actually said he felt Marcus was turning the corner, that an important film session, and he was kind of encouraged of what Marcus took from that film session and thought that he could apply that the rest of the way. So, but where Marcus has been outstanding and has really exceeded expectations has been the defensive end, and he's someone that can switch between LeBron and Anthony Davis. He defended them in both matchups. He did a pretty good job on Anthony Davis in the game that the Lakers won. And I'm with you. I think the difference between the Lakers and the Clippers is, if you're asking me who has the better star duo, I think it's the Lakers. I think LeBron and Anthony Davis as a tandem are a better fit than Kawhi and PG, and just, you know, collectively are two better players. I think they're two of the top 5 or 6 guys in the league.
Right.
Paul George, I'd probably put him somewhere between 10 and 15. You know, I'd probably have to look into it more. But to me, Paul George is clearly a top 15 player. Is he top 10? Right. I think it's debatable. Last season he was, but this season I think it's debatable. So at the top, I give the Lakers the edge. Coaching, I think Frank Vogel is a very good coach, but I'd favor Doc Rivers. He's a championship coach, made the finals a couple times, been coaching for 20-plus years now, second longest tenured coach in the league behind Greg Popovich. So, you know, I'd give the Clippers an edge there. They also have a really deep assistant staff. But to me, where the difference is between these two teams is the depth of the rosters and the versatility of the rosters. The Lakers kind of play a certain way. You know, if they were playing Anthony Davis more at the five, which maybe they will in the postseason, I might give them even the edge just because of how good Anthony Davis can be at the five. But right, they tend to play a center. It's going to be JaVale or Dwight. And then they're just trying to put some shooters around LeBron and AD. And if you just look at the rosters, I don't think they're comparable in terms of depth. Like, to me, I don't know who you're relying on as your third guy for the Lakers. Is it Kuzma? Is it Danny Green? You know, Avery Bradley just had a big game against the Clippers. Like, are you really relying on him as your third guy? Whereas the Clippers, you got Lou Williams, you got Montrezl Harrell, you got Marcus Morris. You even got a guy like Landry Shamet, who was starting last season and had some pretty big performances in the playoffs. A guy like JaMychal Green, who was also starting in the playoffs, had some big performances against the Warriors. Like, those guys are like 8th and 9th on the Clippers depth chart, where to me, I'm not even certain about the third guy on the Lakers. So that to me is where I give the Clippers the edge. Ultimately, if you ask me, I pick the Clippers in 7 games over the Lakers. And yes, that would be them winning, you know, at Staples with the Lakers home game. You know, Lakers being home for game seven, I'd be picking the Clippers, but I don't feel right picking it in six. You know, to me, it's a 6 or 7 game series. Clippers
right.
win, but I could easily see the Lakers winning as well.
Yeah, and the Clippers also took a Reggie Jackson. I mean, did.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson's been
crazy,
huge for them.
Man. Yeah.
He was, you know, starting point guard in Detroit, now playing 15 minutes a night off the bench for the Clippers.
Right. It's crazy. It's an offense, basically, like Lou Williams. It's crazy. Like, yo, Clippers are loaded, man. Kawhi Leonard is relatively quiet. But he speaks, he lets his game speak on the floor. Do you think he's, like, is he one of the locker room leaders, would you say?
I think it's been a learning process, a growth, you know, a process of growth with him, because I think coming in, you know, he is someone who is quiet. He is someone who is not necessarily going to go out of his way to get to know everybody, get to know his new teammates. And, you know, that's just kind of his personality. And, you know, he you know, that's just kind of how he is. And then on top of that, he was drafted in San Antonio, where they kind of just encourage you to be how you are. They accept you, you know, they don't try to mold you or make you into something you're not. And I think they really just kind of encouraged, hey, if you're a quiet guy, be a quiet guy. Like, that's, you know, that's just how you are. Sure. So, and then in Toronto, obviously it was a 1-year rental. So, you know, everyone was kind of on their best behavior, not trying to upset him and stuff. So I think he's never kind of been challenged to be more of a vocal leader. And I think that's where what the Clippers have done a little bit this season is kind of challenging that side of him, because the two leaders from last season were Pat Beverly and Lou Williams. Those guys have continued to lead. But it's kind of been an interesting dynamic, because those two guys aren't the best guys on the floor. And doesn't mean, you know, in not every case you have to be the best player to be a team leader. But
yeah.
In most, you know, a lot of cases, especially the better teams, you know, the best players tend to be one of the two or three most vocal guys on the team. Like, even going back to, let's just say, the Lakers, like, you know, Kobe was the leader. But if you want to even say, like, Derek Fisher was more the leader, that's fine. But,
right.
But Kobe was right there at number two or whatever as kind of the most vocal, outspoken guys in that locker room. You know, and he and Fisher kind of had that good cop, bad cop thing. So I think that's kind of what Lou and Pat had, where Lou is more soft-spoken, chill, laid back. He's more the good cop. And then Pat, of course, is the bad cop, and he's yelling at people and keeping them in check and stuff. But Kawhi and PG kind of entered an interesting dynamic, because it was a lot of the same guys from last season. So you kind of had this team that had already been together, been in the playoffs, and now they're adding two best players on the team to the locker room. So I think it's been a growth and adjustment process for everybody. But from all indications, like, Kawhi has gotten more comfortable around those guys. You know, there have been moments where I think they've wanted him to be more vocal, but for the most part, overall, I think he's grown into that. You know, he's been more vocal in like the group chat and like film sessions. They've been having these player-only film sessions over the last like month and a half of the season while it was still going on, and Kawhi was leading those. So I do think that it was trending in a positive direction, and he was being more comfortable with the guys. And come playoff time, he would have been one of the most vocal guys in that locker room.
We can't talk about the Clippers without talking about Steve Ballmer. He's one of my favorite owners in the league. I would say next to Mark Cuban. It's obvious he loves his franchise. He loves what he does. He's always excited and engaged, whether it's at a press conference or at a game. You've always seen him into it, just hyping up everybody. Speak on what he brings to the organization.
Well, I think it's interesting because he – so first and foremost, he does bring that passion. And I think, as you said, you can see it. And that was one of the things that, you know, first endeared people to Mark Cuban, was you could tell – you know, Mark Cuban was getting technicals and getting ejected and, you know, running onto the court and yelling at the refs and, like – although it probably wasn't the most, like, professional tactics to take as an owner, and it definitely cost him a lot of money, it did get him out there. You know, he would be on SportsCenter, and people would talk about it. But it also, you know, made people know that he cared, and it was almost like he felt like if you just got a really passionate sports fan and gave them a team and said, hey, you're in charge of this team now, like that's how a lot of, you know, fans would act. They would be impassioned. They would be kind of, you know, just yelling at the refs and trying to, you know, he was always sitting as close to the bench as possible, basically right next to the bench. And that had been a different sight than most of the owners throughout not just NBA history, but really sports history, where right. they're in the fancy box with all their rich friends, and or they're sitting courtside, and you know, it's kind of like a scene, and they're trying to act cool, and you know, they have all this money. Mark Cuban is right there, you know, wearing Mavericks football jerseys and you know, all this weird stuff, and just acting like an actual fan. That's what right. Steve Ballmer has brought. You know, he's dancing and he's firing the hot dog cannon, and he's sitting right near the bench, and he's as part of it, you know, yeah. as much a part of it as any fan in the building. And I think that's something that Clipper fans have really loved. But I think the thing that doesn't get talked about enough with Steve Ballmer is that this guy is incredibly brilliant, and you don't just stumble into $50+ billion. You know, you don't just yeah, accidentally right. get that much money. And yeah. I think the genius of Steve Ballmer, and I don't use that word lightly, you know, the genius of Steve yeah. Ballmer, I think is the most slept on part, because this is someone that has admitted, you know, I went to Clippers training camp in Hawaii, you know, back in end of September.
Yeah.
And we had a luncheon with Steve, and he admitted to us on the record, you know, we had a 1 hour conversation with him, and he said, you know, it did take me 2-3 years to kind of find my footing as an owner. And he yeah. really looked at kind of like that 2017 offseason when they reshaped the front office, when okay. they made the difficult decision to trade Chris Paul, as a pivotal summer where he found the people he trusted in the front yeah. office with the coaching staff. And really the Clippers have taken off, I think, from that point. So what I think that the smart thing with him is, he has put people in place that he trusts and believes in, right. and he empowers them to make decisions. And I think far too often you see with owners, they get in the way of things. You know, even going back to, Donald Sterling, you know, we don't even have to get into him as an individual, which, you know, despicable, plenty of negative things there. But even him as an owner,
yeah.
you know, recently trying to squash the J.J. Redick trade in the summer of 2013, because J.J. Redick was a white player and he didn't want to pay a white player that much money. And just stuff like that is where, you know, an owner will go against the front office and do something. I mean, not as ridiculous as Sterling, because he was the most ridiculous, but just, you know, that type of stuff happens behind the scenes, where maybe a GM or a president wants to make a move and the owner will say no, because for whatever reason, they disagree with it and they think they know better. And I think Steve Ballmer has done a really good job of just empowering the right people, making smart decisions, and also putting his money where his mouth is. This guy has invested yeah. a lot of money in this team. He overpaid to buy them. He now just purchased the Forum to yeah. ensure that they can build this new arena in Inglewood.
Inglewood, yeah.
Which is now, you know, with that purchase and how much he's already spending on the new arena, that might end up being another $2 billion he's putting into an arena, and that's all out of his own pocket. So for him to do that, or most of it's out of his own pocket, for him to yeah. do that, I think really speaks to his commitment to the Clippers, his investment in the Clippers. And again, we see it time and time again where these owners are incredibly wealthy, you know, multi-billions of dollars, and even like those owners will not spend, you know, X amount of money on their team. Right. Steve Ballmer is way beyond that. He's the richest owner in North America, but he's actually willing to spend it. You know, he's using that as an actual asset, a resource, an advantage for the Clippers. And I think moving forward, you're going to continue to see that, where, you know, Ballmer will pay the luxury tax. He will pay to keep talent, you know, on the coaching side or the front office side. Like, he's going to make the Clippers an even better organization moving forward. And I think that's a legitimate advantage that they have over other organizations.
Yeah, the Clippers are the perfect example of, you have to take chances in order to build your future. Like you said, he put the right people around him in the office and everything. And he just saw $400 million cash. Who does that? Like, that's crazy. I love another owner. I really do. How much do you think there's pressure on the Clippers to, I wouldn't say finish this season, but maybe, well, is there pressure on the Clippers for this NBA season to finish out the way Paul George and Kawhi Leonard's contracts are set up?
Yeah, I do think there's pressure. I think that, you know, they each have 1 year left.
Yeah, next year
would
be
contract.
All in.
Yeah, so I think, look, on the one hand, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are both from the L.A. area.
Right.
You know, they've both talked about the benefits of coming home, being back in L.A., being closer to their families, having their families where they want to be. And I think you can't really put a price on that. And
right.
On top of all of that, now that they are Clippers, the Clippers will be able to pay them more money than anybody else.
Yeah.
You kind of combine those two factors, and I do think it is significantly more likely than not that both guys end up re-signing in the summer of 2021. Now, that being said, there is a lot of pressure, and if the season is canceled or the Clippers do have a disappointing end to the season, you know, maybe lose in the second round or something like that, that puts a lot of pressure on next season to basically win the championship or at least make the finals. And if they fall short of that, you can't rule out one or both leaving. Now, again, I don't think that's likely. I think it's it would almost have to be a disaster for that to happen where maybe this season's canceled and then, like, next season they lose in the second round and it's just clear, like, games don't mesh in the playoffs or – they don't get along or something like that to really cause them, you know, one or both to leave. So I don't think that's going to happen or even is likely to happen, but it is a possibility. And that is the risk that the Clippers, you know, took on by trading 5 picks and 2 pick swaps and, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to get these guys. You know, like if those two guys leave in 2021, the Clippers are in a terrible place as a franchise in terms of just no picks until the mid-2020s. You know, they'll have some cap space, but unless they get another star, they will not be in a good spot. So they have kind of gone all in on these next two seasons or, you know, the rest of this season and next season. But I think it's worth it. And when you can go all in to win a championship, I think more often than not, you should, especially with, you know, looking like they're maybe the favorites if, you know, if they're healthy. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch, though, because if the season is canceled, it really does set up a lot of pressure on next season.
Yeah, one thing working in the Clippers' favor is, as we just spoke upon, is Steve Ballmer. He's showing his players he's willing to put other players around them and create a winning culture and organization. And we all know the agents love to see that before they make a major commitment to a team. No player is going to go to a team where they see the owner isn't willing to spend for them other players around them, another home to play in. The Steve Ballmer is definitely an asset in bringing in free agents.
Seriously, yeah, no, I agree.
So I think one advantage the Clippers will have if the season is canceled is LeBron being another year older, he being his 18th year, and the Clippers are still becoming strong. And they'll be more hungry next year if the season is canceled. But I think they're going to work this out now. We at least won't have a playoffs this year. But I think the Clippers are set up for the next 2 years regardless.
Yeah, I think to your point that, you know, there probably will be some type of postseason at some point. It does seem like we'll know by early to mid-June at the latest. Have some inkling of it's either happening or it's not happening, or it's happening in this capacity. It does seem like the next kind of month and a half is when we'll have some sort of resolution one way or the other. But no, I mean, Steve Ballmer is, again, I think that's one of the differences between this kind of current state of the Clippers versus where they were a few years ago, was that I think people wanted to play with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and Doc because they were good in that moment, and because the franchise was in LA, and, you know, I think it just was an attractive situation at the time. But you kind of saw for that year or so, you know, they were not necessarily talked about in, you know, kind of the year in between, like Chris left and you know, then they traded Blake, and it was just, I think that they weren't viewed the same way that they are now. And I think pulling off the Kawhi Leonard signing, the Paul George trade, some of the moves they've been able to make, they have garnered a lot of respect over the past few years. And it isn't just, you know, it's now we have Steve Ballmer, we have LA, we have a really good front office, we have an elite coach that's won a championship in Doc. Like, we have all of these things that are attractive to players, whereas 5 years ago, you know, they had Donald Sterling as their owner, or, you know, 6 years ago. And there was no guarantee that this wasn't just going to be a, you know, a few-year window or run, and then they'd go back to being the Clippers. Like, now I think it's kind of ruled out. Like, the team is not going to be those Clippers, the old Clippers of, you know, the Clipper curse and botched draft picks and trades and signings and all these bad things that have haunted the Clippers for so many years. I think that's in the rear view. And I think moving forward, it's a new day for the Clippers, and it's just a new organization with new ownership, new life. And I think everything's kind of trending upward.
I definitely agree. And looking over the Western Conference landscape, I see over the next few years, the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Warriors as a threat. I see the Warriors, because you all know right now they're last, but, you know, they're doing a quick turnaround because they're coming back healthy with an armed with a top five draft pick, which they're probably going to move for another vet. So I see the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Warriors battling it out next season.
The Battle of California, man.
Crazy.
Got to get the Kings in there somehow.
Joe Vaughn, thank you again for joining me, man. It's been a while. It was good talking to you again.
We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for doing me. Good rest of the day in D.C.
You too, man.
All right, see you.
Peace.
Yes, once again, that was the Athletic LA Clippers reporter, Javon Bruja, joining me again on the big panel. Catch you next week.